a very special episode of Port Zero, Brian Trunzo, because we are interviewing you for a change.
Yeah, man, I'm in the hot seat. Roles reversed.
We're not gonna take a long time. I just want to learn more about who you are as a person, because I find you genuinely really interesting. And I feel like you have a really cool, as you say on your own show, origin story.
Sure, I do like that phrase, origin story. I love that phrase.
We'll kick it off here because this is what I know about you. This is the earliest I know of Trunzo, is that you owned your own fashion company.
Yeah, that was my second career.
That was your second career. What was your first career?
My first career was a financial services attorney. I had a Jerry Maguire bad pizza moment, literally, on Christmas Eve. I was still in the office eating pizza, was late to our Christmas Eve. And I thought to myself, well, this isn't going to last. Circled a date on the calendar about a year in the future from that day and said, I will quit my job on this day. Did not know what that meant. There's a long story in between. I ended up becoming a fashion entrepreneur, having owned and operated a store in Manhattan, launched a brand out of that store. Again, there's a big story in between, too long of a story for our purposes here. But that's how I moved from, I was an attorney. I still am an attorney. I'm barred in the state of New York. None of this is legal advice. But moved into fashion, and then from there into trend forecasting. Had sold my businesses in 2016. Mm-hmm. Kind of depressed. Like, wasn't very happy, looking for meaning. I mean, the store and the brand, like, that was my life. And I lost purpose, and I stumbled into Ethereum and became a maxi pretty much immediately. It gave me purpose in life. And I was doing trend forecasting, talking to large corporates, fashion companies, consumer-led companies, CPG companies, about what the kids are getting into, you know, and the whole purpose of trend forecasting is to influence the decisions that they make in terms of the products they design. And I started slipping in information about digital scarcity, cosmetics, wearables, and eventually ERC 721s, CryptoKitties, into my presentations, and sort of like made it my life's goal to talk about wearables, talk about NFTs, and sort of like put that in front of companies. Got laughed out of rooms, and then re-invited back into rooms, you know, 5 years later.
So. What year was this?
2017. Well, CryptoKitties came out, I think, November 2017. So right around, so I got into crypto, Ethereum proper, in April of 2017. So my education period, really, like that rabbit hole moment, was most intense those first couple months. And then by the time CryptoKitties came out, I was just like so effusive in my excitement, in sort of like jamming this concept of NFTs into my presentation. So that set me off on a trajectory. Always worked in fashion, was building a metaverse consultancy alongside it. Knew I had another bad pizza moment, knew I had to quit my job in fashion. And it was, do I you know, try to raise capital and build this metaverse consultancy? And my risk profile was very low at the time. I wasn't gonna do that. Or do I find a job? And through FWB, shout out to Friends with Benefits.
Ooh, very cool.
Met Ashan, the great Ashan from Polygon Studios, and Chad, the great Chad Huggins from Polygon Studios. And a job opened up, and it fit my skill set, and here we are.
How did we get from being involved with a DAO, like FWB, to more or less being known as the metaverse guy in, you know, in Web3, especially in Polygon circles?
Yeah.
Obviously, your background in fashion sort of lends itself very organically to that. Did you, were you trying to be sort of a metaversal Web3 socialite, or how did this happen? How did you get to where you are now?
You know, so Matthew Ball lays out a framework for the open decentralized web, right? His metaverse essay. And there are 8 points on that essay. And while I do not have a background in gaming, aside from being a very avid gamer, I never worked in gaming or in hardware or any of the other component parts of the metaverse. I had an expertise in consumer. And the last point on his framework is user behavior, which is interesting because a lot of people ignore that, right? Like if we do not have mass user adoption of these technologies, this concept of the metaverse or any technology will never actually take hold. And because of my expertise in consumer, I sort of self-educated myself on the rest of that spectrum through the lens of fashion. Right. So in that time that I was doing trend forecasting and working in fashion and developing a reputation in the space, it was as someone who was thinking about how wearables, digitally scarce wearables, that's to say NFTs, would disrupt the entire supply chain, the entire go-to-market strategy, design, community building, marketing, and merchandising of products for fashion brands. And so I entered the metaverse through the lens of fashion and wearables and digitally scarce cosmetic mm-hmm. items. And so to answer the question more directly, at FWB, I was often talking about these topics.
Sure.
And one day I was waxing poetically about Polygon. And Ashan was like, you know a lot about Polygon. I was like, well, I'm kind of a degenerate super user. I have 4,000 transactions in 5 months on chain. So like, yeah. And that was how it started.
Okay. Gotcha. In 2022, do you find yourself as interested in wearable, you know, metaverse NFTs and stuff like that as you did back then, whenever you first joined, or have your interests sort of changed?
My interests always change, but okay. Fashion has always been a constant in my life, and like analyzing consumer behavior and reading tea leaves and trying to create narratives out of sort of the way macro trends exist in culture. And fashion, having always been something I'm extremely excited about, with, you know, this interest in consumer behavior, I'll never grow tired, or I don't think I'll ever grow tired of fashion. So I don't think I'll ever grow tired of self-expression and identity in the metaverse. And being so passionate, I guess, about property rights and identity, and being sort of a crypto anarchist in ways, having, you know, spent time with the technology before NFTs, right? Like really wrestling with it. I think that just sort of like gave me a really great foundation to build upon, and like first principles from which to live. Some of those first principles are, as I said, property rights, identity, self-expression. Mm-hmm. So probably just doubled down in my sort of excitement for wearables and NFTs vis-a-vis fashion.
Projects you're excited about in 2022 versus projects that you're excited to see later on.
Oh man.
What are you excited about right now?
Big vision stuff.
Yeah.
I'm excited for, so to move away from fashion for a second.
Sure.
I'm excited for CPG companies to figure out loyalty reward programs by leveraging on-chain data and NFTs and creating sort of like an affiliate umbrella inside their dApps. I mean, their apps now, right? They will become dApps. They will be Web3 powered that allow for atomic assets, swapping loyalty reward programs, which allows for affiliate marketing and affiliate sort of collaboration, whereby, you know, X brand can give Y consumer a special experience and a gamified experience within the dApp for holding Z NFTs, right? Like the whole gamification of consumer. And I think CPG is ripe for that, from fast food companies to electronics brands. You know, I really think that we're gonna see some super interesting innovations on chain soon.
I met a few really interesting projects that are, as one very, very talented entrepreneur told me, it's a race to get that in retail right now. I'm seeing that quite a bit. So you mentioned, it's a little bit of a segue, but you mentioned that you were a gamer. Are there any projects in the gaming blockchain sort of sphere that you're excited about, or not so much?
No, of course. I mean, yeah, as a gamer, like I'm excited for pretty much any game of any level of quality coming on chain. Games that I've worked with in a biz dev capacity, helped bring them to Polygon with our wonderful BD team and the associates that I work with, you know, games like Metalcore, for instance, like those guys. Yeah, I worked with Sam Kim, one of the senior advisors there, on sort of evangelizing to him why Polygon, you know, that's one of the biggest sort of roles of a BD associate at Polygon is that whole evangelism, right? Yeah. The excitement for the technology and the application for that technology to games, media, entertainment, whatever business vertical someone's operating in. So Metalcore, super, super excited about that. I love the guys over at Horizon Games, and you know, I play Skyweaver, so I'm a big fan of Skyweaver. And what's funny is I didn't grow up as a CCG guy. Like, I didn't play card games, but I really gravitated towards Skyweaver. Maybe in hope of like an airdrop for a token someday. I don't know. Like, what, you know, we see that.
What sort of games did you play before, you know, Web3 games?
I'm a first, I'm sort of like a solo player, single player games. I love the social aspect of gaming, but I was in college during World of Warcraft, Final Fantasy XI, and I'm an RPG guy, right? So like 16-bit, like, SNES, Square Enix type Japanese RPGs, that's where my interest really lies. Like, I could pick up any Square Enix game from 25 years ago and play it to completion any day. But with the evolution into MMOs, I was in college and I was very cognizant of the fact that if I picked up an MMO, I'd probably fail out of school. So I missed MMOs in their first wave. So I never got into the full social aspect of gaming, right? Like competitive gaming, like fighters. I grew up on Street Fighter II Turbo. That was like one of my favorite games as a child.
Sure.
But I never, like, I may have been like the best in the neighborhood. You know, we all had that moment. Then we went online one day and saw how good the rest of the world is. Yeah. You're like, I'm not good at all.
Yeah, it's very discouraging.
So I can get competitive with sports games, although I stopped playing sports games a couple years ago. So it's really then at the end of the day, action games, adventure games, Metroidvania games, platformers. I love puzzle games. You and I were talking about The Witness the other day. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Blow's wonderful game on PlayStation 4. I forget the name of this YouTube that I'm obsessed with. This dude, he rebuilds SNES and N64 games in like a voxelized style. And he actually showed, he has like 2 hour long YouTubes. He just showcases the process of building these.
Is it 2D or 3D?
It's 3D, fully 3D.
Cool.
And you know, he's done like Ocarina of Time and Mario 64 and none of it's affiliated with Nintendo, and he has these big disclaimers, and he's actually been able to avoid having those videos taken down. I'm not familiar with
somehow,
the back
end somehow.
Of YouTube. Yeah. Yeah. He's not affiliated with Nintendo. Super talented guy, but like a guy like that can go in and recreate like, you know, 10% of Ocarina of Time in voxels in like a couple hours. Actually, not a couple hours. I God knows how long.
Yeah. When you're not focused on either, you know, Web3, when you're not focused on metaverse stuff, and maybe not Web2 stuff either, do you find yourself pursuing different avenues of like technology or learning that aren't in our current industry?
I am forever curious. Like that's like a. I feel like curiosity is a superpower, but also can be debilitating. Like it can be a distraction, right? Like there's something to be said about like going in with a scalpel and going so narrow and so deep on a specific subject. And I have great admiration for people who devote their entire lives to that. I've definitely lost time in my life from being curious about certain things and maybe being distracted in my career or like in my personal interests. On the technology side, like, yeah, I'm sort of like an open book for that. You know, if you take a look at like my podcast, library, mm-hmm. you'd be like, wow, like you've got some ADHD, man. Like,
girl. Well, I have to ask now, like,
most of them are crypto adjacent, to be honest.
Understood.
You know, but anything from like, you know, the history of everything, you know, to Sam Harris, you know, and anything in between.
Sure.
You know, the intellectual dark web folks as well. You know, I'm fascinated by what those guys have to talk about, even though, you know, a non-insubstantial amount of the time I don't know what they're talking about. I'm trying to understand it, broaden my horizons a little bit.
You're always learning.
Always learning, yeah. I think that's important. You know, I think it's important. If there's one constant, there are a few constants in the world, but if there's one to, you know, pinpoint right now, it's that, you know, change is inevitable. And we've heard that, you know, many prolific thinkers have said that over the course of time. I actually wouldn't even know who to attribute that quote to. It's certainly not my quote. But, you know, change is a constant. Mm-hmm. And we sort of owe it to ourselves, I believe, to stay curious and stay up on things. And, you know, to recognize that it's necessarily always the case that you're living through a moment in time, like through literal history, right? To zoom out and appreciate the fact that like crypto and Web3 is going to change everything. Like now, what that actually looks like, the galaxy brains are figuring that out, right? Like the folks at Polygon are figuring that out, right? Yeah. Like I'm a humble BD servant who's here to be an evangelist and an onboarding engine and sort of a mouthpiece for the technology, a cog in the machine, right, to help it forward and do my job, right? But there are those galaxy brains who are thinking about like how this will actually change the world and have nothing but the deepest appreciation for what those guys do. So
absolutely, the builders,
the builders,
the builders,
yeah. Builders.
So you have tied yourself to an organization, Polygon Studios, but you're also very individualistic. You're very sort of powerful in that sense. Where do you want to see Polygon go? Sorry, Polygon Studios. Where do you want to see our brand go?
Man, world domination. Well, no, this is a question for our fearless leader, Ryan Wyatt. By the way, Ryan, just like the perfect man for the job. I mean, when we announced his hire, like I think everyone across the protocol, not just studios, was just super stoked to have him on board. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's really put forth this vision for operational excellence to build out a team, starting with the gaming, you know, and also moving into the entertainment vertical. We just hired a wonderful VP, Kelly DiGregorio, formerly of Dapper Labs, super talented individual, deep experience in entertainment, leading that vertical, and building out the guardrails to like what BD looks like, what customer success looks like, bringing on Ron Shepard, deep background from Unity in building out incredible teams over there in terms of developer support, middleware support, and also the marketing part of that equation, right? So I think maybe not so much the brand, but on the vision side, just a world-class organization of excited folks of all walks of life and all vertical expertises to really just bring Polygon to the masses, you know? Those are some big words. Those are like lofty words, like future state, vision level stuff. And I hope Ryan would approve with what I just said. But I think it's completely attainable. And I think we've like pressed play on that, right? Like somebody put the cassette in and hit the play button.
I think so too. I think our presence here at NFT NYC is also a really good reflection of that.
Yeah, I mean, we'd be remiss if we didn't bring that up. I mean, like, this was a big coming out party. I mean, not a coming out party. I mean, Polygon Studios and Polygon have a strong brand. Like, people, you know, actually, people within Web3 know it, right? Like, we have a strong brand within Web3. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's now, like, the coming out party for people who are adjacent to Web3 or, mm-hmm. you know, NFT enthusiasts, because this is a consumer-facing festival as well, right? So you have a lot of individuals running through the Marriott Marquis and through our offsite hub here who are learning about Polygon and Polygon Studios for the first time. So it's kind of like strong brand, but like maybe not strong brand on the mainstream side and brand building. And it's a lot of fun.
And it's interesting to see it go from 400 people last year. Were you here last year?
I started in December.
Okay. Yeah. Apologies. So it's interesting to see it go from 400 to 16,000 attendees.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Polygon. Yeah, NFT. I was here last year. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I thought you meant was I here at Polygon as an employee?
Oh, apologies.
Yeah, yeah. Apologies. No, I was here. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have we're actually kind of smack dab in the middle of the entire event. You got in here kind of late, right? You had sort of an issue happen with your flight.
Let's not even get started. I missed. So I'll just say one thing. Yeah. I went from having like a really busy 4 days to an completely unmanageable 3 days because I lost 18 hours due to travel trouble.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think you're doing a great job. We love having your presence here. And hey, I mean, you were able to make some room for this interview, so I think you're handling your calendar quite well. But the last thing I want to ask you is, you know, what are sort of your sentiments about the event? What are your thoughts there as far as, you know, who's all here and your sort of perception and reading on the energy, on the vibe right now?
Yeah, I hate parroting and repeating some of the most common tropes that you hear at an event because it's water cooler and people pick up on other people, but they're real trends, right? Like, and one of the big trends that you hear in the space, even leading into NFT NYC, and maybe some of it's copium, but I think there's a lot of truth to it, is that this bear market, which we are undeniably obviously now in, which people have been denying for a while. Oh, like as ETH lost 25% and Bitcoin lost 50%, like people are like, oh, it's not really a bear, it's a crab. You know, we heard all these analogies, but we're properly in a bear. You know, the trope that you hear is, oh, you know, we needed to trim the trees to let them grow. Oh, you know, we needed to shake out bad actors and grifters and opportunists. Oh, you know, this will be great for the health of the space. And while that is a trope and has become a meme here, I truly believe that there is 100% truth behind that. And I think everyone at Polygon would agree, to the point that we made t-shirts that said the bear is for builders.
It's a great shirt. You know, designed by our very own Alba Tudela.
Alba is just incredible. I mean, and the speed at which Alba works.
A day.
Like whipping things up. A day. It's incredible.
It's amazing.
Shout out Alba if you're listening. But no, the bear is for builders is so real. Like, you know, you zoom out and you think, you know, the euphoria of 2017 led to the crash of 2018. And what did we get? DeFi. Actually, we got DeFi and NFTs. You know, I mean, NFTs were made well before 2018. But, you know, they were proliferating. And one can even say, actually, NFTs really had their coming out party after COVID, that other crash happened. Yes, right? Like, people forget. You know, I don't measure things in Bitcoin. I measure it in ETH. You know, I know people do things differently. So, you know, hitting triple digit, like 100. Oh, actually, almost. I think we bounced off of like $90-something in March of 2020. You know, that is when like NFTs actually started to become a thing, right? So in the last two bears, then, I think we can say with all certainty that we got DeFi and NFTs.
Yes.
And now it's like, okay, what are we going to get? What are we about to get?
What nascent technology is there that we have in one way or another heard of already that just isn't that popular?
What's going to get, what's really going to find its sea legs and what's going to take hold, right? Like a lot of people are talking about DAOs, like, you know, DAOs are a very exciting space. Regulatory uncertainty there, right? You know, tax liability issues. And so like, is our DAOs ready for the prime time? Like, you know, if we have regulatory issues associated therewith, ZKs, right? Like we're about to be production grade with our ZK roadmap.
Yes.
So ZKs, Supernets, like where are we taking that? Like, is that going to be what emerges from the bear as the strongest technology? Maybe. I'd bet on it. But at the end of the day, it's just like exciting to even talk about, you know, or think about.
I agree. Well, you're a wealth of information, man. I appreciate it so much.
No, Eldar, you make it really easy to talk about these things.
Let's take it. Let's go all the way down here. The last question I'm going to ask, are you playing any games right now? Are you playing anything interesting in your spare time?
Yeah, so my gaming laptop was in the shop, and I wanted to get back. So I, if you remember, about a half hour ago, I said that I never played MMOs.
You did say that.
I started playing Final Fantasy 14.
Could be your downfall.
In 2022. Yeah, I might get fired. I think as a well-adjusted adult, I can like play MMOs now.
Yeah.
But I started playing Final Fantasy 14 a few months back, and then Horizon Forbidden West came out, and I played that. I didn't 100% it. I'm a 100%er.
Cool.
I'm like really devoted.
We're similar.
It got to like 80% maybe.
Yeah.
And then my laptop was ready to pick up from the shop like 2 days ago.
Okay.
But I've been with my travel trouble and, you know, with NFT NYC. So once I pick up my laptop, I'm going to give MMOs a fair shake and I'm going to try to play Final Fantasy 14. So if anyone wants to invite me to a guild.
That's awesome.
I've never been in a guild. So.
My wife plays, and I'm in the same boat where I know that if I got really into a MMO, I would spend way too much time.
Yeah.
Way too much time playing.
Well, say a prayer for me that I can show restraint.
A fellow completionist, though.
Yeah. No, I love...
That's great.
Yeah. Sometimes it gets in the way of enjoying the game, though. It gets, like, really grindy. Mm-hmm. And then, like...
You have to know when the right moment to hit the eject button is.
Yeah. Like, so, for instance, in Horizon, like, I didn't enjoy finding the black boxes, nor did I enjoy, like, the Vista Point searches. But, like... I found myself doing all of them, and that's when I decided to stop playing the game. Like, I had completed the game, I, you know, did most of the things I enjoyed doing, and then I found myself grinding on that, and I was like, okay, like...
Are you a trophy hunter?
I'm done. Not a trophy hunter, though.
Okay, just a completionist.
I'm not obsessed with, like, golds. Like, I don't need
first,
golds on my
the
PlayStation.
The first UI stack you're into.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and usually it's, like, so with Horizon, for instance, it was, like, complete all the combat stuff and complete all the puzzle stuff. Like I find it silly. The silly like scavengery stuff. I was like, all right, like I don't need to look for things.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I know. It's the Easter egg effect.
Yeah,
we don't need it.
Yeah, you know, and if I can complain for 1 second, I got to do better than climbing. Climbing, like games rely on climbing so much. It just bothers me. I don't know if I'm alone in that. I feel like Breath of the Wild figured it out by having like a meter.
It gamifies it,
so you actually have to build up to climb. But like. I found myself climbing in Horizon. Maybe it's because I wasn't following paths correctly and I was trying to like cut through the map. It's frustrating. Like, I don't want to climb anymore. Take that out of game. Game developers listening, take that out of your game.
There is a very long ladder in a game called Metal Gear Solid 3 that I'll send you just because it's a literal 3-minute long ladder climb.
Yeah.
You'll hate it.
Well, I've only played the first Metal Gear Solid. Never played 2, 3. Never. Nope.
An absolute classic.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to say... we're at our 30 minutes, but it's been an absolute joy. I could ask you a bunch of more questions, but I won't. Maybe we'll do a part two interview next year.
Awesome.
That'd be great. Eldar.
Brian. A legend.
Thanks, man.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
It. Fist bump. Audible fist bump. Thanks so much.
You think they heard that?
Yeah.